So the principle of becoming, developing in spiritual life, basically is dependent upon, of course, one's determination that that's what one wants. But actually what makes it happen is the association of devotees. Because it's in the association of devotees that one actually learns how to relate to Krishna, how to develop love for Krishna. Because it's a matter of cultivation. Right? Krishna is associating with his eternal associates. So if we associate with them, then we naturally develop their mood. Right? If we don't associate with them, we won't develop the mood. Right? And why would we be associating with them? Because Krishna, the worship of Krishna, or pleasing Krishna, is important to us. If it's not important to us, then it's not going to happen, because that's what's important to them. So why would we get their association if we're not interested? Right. So this principle of associating with devotees, that it's important to be with devotees and to associate with devotees, right? That's the central principle of Krishna consciousness. Right. The process is chanting Hare Krishna, because that means we're always absorbed in Krishna, but it's not done alone, it's always done in the association of devotees. Therefore, Sankirtana. Right. Means in the Satyuga, one would meditate upon the super soul, but to meditate on the super soul, that doesn't require anybody else. But once you come to the platform where you realize the super soul, then if you take up devotional service at that point, then you start associating with devotees. Because now it's about developing love for Krishna. But the Treta Yuga, then you have to, doing yajnas, then it's done. You're talking, you know, just the priests, the main priests and big yajnas, you're talking 90 priests or something. Right? So there's a lot of association. Then there's so many other people that are present. You know, deity worship, then it's involved with a lot of people. Like in Vrindavan, when Prabhupada opened the temple, he thought it would be a proper standard to have 100 pujaris for the temple in Vrindavan. But, you know, so you have a nice association. They would do the artiks, the pujas. They would do the cooking. They would do the kirtan, you know, the bhajans during the day. Everything would be done. So all the activities, the festivals. So, and then Kali Yuga then is just the essential. So it's chanting Hare Krishna and the association of devotees. Right? Therefore, Sankirtana. Right? That makes sense. So that's the important element. So one's advancement in Krishna consciousness is actually based on how you associate with devotees. Right? That's actually how you tell who's advanced. It's not other things. Of course, the neophyte, then whatever material opulence they have, they feel that that's the sign of advancement. Right? Someone with more knowledge, or someone with more wealth, more influence. Right? Does that make sense? You know, whatever your previous qualifications are, then we will consider that as our advance in Krishna consciousness. But that's the neophyte's view. So you don't have to worry, it's not an important aspect of Krishna consciousness. It's important. It means, of course, respect is given, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're advanced. Does that make sense? Like your parents. They're older than you. You respect them because of the age. It doesn't mean they're more advanced. So respect is there, but respect and devotional advancement are two different things. So the whole point is about association of devotees. So that's where the Madhyama then is different from the neophyte, in that the Madhyama values devotee association. That's the principle. So that has to be looked at seriously. How to associate properly with devotees, how to respect devotees, how to appreciate devotees, and that will make it, that will make our life strong. That will be the inspiration. Right? Because it's only in the association with devotees that one tastes the niceness of Krishna consciousness. We're looking for that interaction with others who are doing something that we're doing. Right? That's why people make you know, have societies and clubs and whatever else there might be to create people getting together. So then, for the devotees, then that's just natural, because instead of being around some sport or, you know, chess or, you know, some other kind of thing like that, or, you know, whoever likes to have black fingernails and wear black mascara, then they all get together or something like that. So it's a matter of who is interested in Krishna. So then even the social element is Krishna conscious. So then one should always be seeing how that can be developed, how that can be improved. Because other things are important, but one always has to know what actually makes things work. Right? The sincerity has to be there. And if that sincerity is there, then one will appreciate devotees. Sincerity is not there, then one won't be able to find devotees. It's that simple. Right? If you're not sincere, then you won't think that there's anyone worth associating with. Right? Maya is so clever. Even though there's tens of thousands of persons to associate with, one will consider that no one is qualified. So one has to avoid that. That's not good. It's not very useful. Any questions on this? In any particular directions? It's very vast.
As you're talking about, on one side, if we are too proud and we think that we're the greatest, is there also a danger of sort of thinking that we're too useless? Like,
no, it's not a matter of it will be a danger. It is a danger. Being too useless is a mode of ignorance. Being too proud is a mode of ignorance. Because proud means think you're more useful than you are, and when you think you're useless, you think you're less useful than you are. So both of them are ignorance. Because it's not about ourself. It means, of course, it's about self-realization. But the point is, the soul is liberated. The soul is transcendental. So there's not a whole lot of uselessness about that. The uselessness is our identity with the material energy. But the point is as long as we're able to engage that in Krishna's service, then it's still useful. But when our pride is so great that it implodes, then we feel that I'm not able to, my skills or the situation does not match the pride I have about myself, then you become self-conscious and say, I'm useless. Does that make sense? Even though it looks like one's being humble, but that's not humble. Humble is you're dealing with facts. Lacking self-confidence, that's not dealing with facts. That's dealing with, I can't attain to the position of greatness that I feel I should be. In other words, it's just the negative side of too much of pride. Right? Humility is just fact. I'm the soul. So I'm certain of Krishna, but somehow or another I'm in the material world. And so, therefore, that's not a really glorious situation. And so I should do the best I can by taking what facility I do have and engaging it in the Lord's service. Right? That's humility. So it's not that it's my idea or my results, but it's Krishna's given the process. It's given to us by the acharyas. They have given it. And so then one can actually be very dynamic and very bold, you know, and that's a manifestation of humility. Generally we take it if there's too much boldness or that it's not humble. But then that's meaning it's about us. But here it's about Krishna, about the acharyas, about the devotees, so therefore one can be very confident about that what the acharyas say, what the shastras say is correct, and then preach it very boldly. You know? Is it the sound of stuff? Yeah. Yes.
Maharaji was saying that you know, we can easily think that there's no devotees to associate with. minds are really tricky like that. So when we've been in a situation where we've placed a lot of faith in a particular devotee, and we've seen them as being inspiration in Krishna consciousness, and then when that devotee is no longer in our life, how do we not fall into that trap of kind of rationalizing that all devotees are like that, you know, that has been tested in devotees?
The basic principle is that what is that devotee doing? It's about them, or it's about their representing Krishna. So the specialness is the representation of Krishna. Right? That's the position. That's why they're special, is because they're representing Krishna. So then, in representing Krishna, as long as one's able to do that, then that's good. That's the ideal. That's what we want. But if at any point someone's not, then it just means they're not. Like, what has it got to do with everybody else? Everybody's an individual. Right? You have iron. If you put it in fire, it becomes hot. Right? You take it out of the fire, it becomes cold. You put it back in the fire, it becomes hot again. So if you have so many pieces of iron in the fire and you take one of them out, what's that got to do with all the others? Yeah, you understand? It's an individual thing. Everybody is trying to do some service to, you know, Guru and Krishna, and if they're able to, you know, can be functioning in that, then that's the natural position. But if somehow or another they're not engaged in that, then that's just the particular position they're in. Because the point is the faith is supposed to be in Krishna. Right? And then the personalities that represent, because now they're like iron and fire, then that becomes as good as Krishna. If the iron's not in the fire, then they're not representing Krishna. But Krishna, the position of Krishna doesn't change. The position of Krishna's devotee doesn't change. It's just whether, you know, just like fire doesn't change because the iron goes out of the fire. The nature of fire remains. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of taking shelter of other devotees. But, you know, of course, there's the emotional element and all that. That's big, of course. But the principle of Krishna consciousness doesn't adjust. So. Yes?
I was wondering about in a community of devotees, if the devotee's in a situation where there are rumors spread about them.
There's rumors spread about them.
Yes. How can they deal with that practically within the community as well as internally? Can you see the doubts?
The point is that the connection is between you and Krishna. You're doing your service, and so rumors don't have any position of value in devotional service. They may be popular, but they don't have anything to do with devotional service. Right? You know, that's the Bhaktivinoda Gaura's commentary in the third verse of Upadeshamrita. Then makes the point that devotees talking prajalpa about other devotees, it's still prajalpa. You know, they'll try to make it sound like it's really Krishna conscious, but it never is. So unless you're directly involved with the individual that the rumor is about, and there's something to be done, then talking about that with the person or with those who are in a position to do something about it, then there's an element of service there. Right? But if you're anyone else other than that, it's just upfront nonsense, that's all. You know, no ifs, ands, or buts. You know, that's the meaning of neophyte. Neophyte doesn't really appreciate devotees. So people are doing great things all the time, no one's talking about it. Someone does something wrong, immediately talking about it. So that's why the neophyte's called prakita. It means material. It means they're engaging their material position in Krishna consciousness, but they still think they're that material position. Right? The madhyama means they are comfortable with that material position because that's what they have. And so they're comfortable using it in Krishna's service. So the identity with it is very, very minimal. But the neophyte has to identify very strongly. Therefore, then, the quality of one's devotional service is dependent upon the quality of your conditioning. So better conditioning means you're better devoting. Right? You know, something's a fault in your conditioning, then that immediately means you're not a good devotee. You know what I'm saying? So it's in the field of a theistic moralist, selfless moralist, which means it's an atheistic position, because it's not about God. Right? Does that make sense? So it's the second level of consciousness. Devotional service is the fifth. So it's quite a gap. You know what I'm saying? So that's the one position. The other position is, then you can be happy knowing that people are spreading rumors about you, because whether they're right or wrong, that they're criticizing you, they're taking on all the bad qualities that they see in you. So if you don't criticize them back, you don't get it back. So whether it's right or it's wrong, it doesn't matter. You're purified. So the bigger the rumor, the more you get purified. You know? And so whatever is the bad quality they're perceiving in you, that's the quality they're taking on and gaining. So you just watch the people who criticize all the time, especially if they have a real strong thing about a particular aspect. You'll just see, give it, you know, 5, 10, 20 years, and then they'll have that quality. They'll be doing the same, all the things that they complain about. Why? Because they've taken it on from others. So they're doing a service to you.
How do we cultivate the desire for bhakti, and how do we make that desire manifest in our behavior?
How do you cultivate the desire for bhakti? It's just the habit. Because that's what the soul can do, is desire. That's basically what the soul does. Mechanically, that's all the soul does, because the soul is 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. They're not like you're scratching your, you know, there, moving your arm. The soul can't do that. They're too small. Right? Your arm is like probably millions of times bigger than you are. Right? You understand? So, you know, it weighs a lot more, right? So, you know, I mean, you have, what is it, a beetle that can move like 40 or 60 times its weight, and it's considered the strongest living entity in proportion to what it can, you know, its size and weight and what it can move. So you can't do that. It's the modes of nature that are doing it. You desire it, the Lord sanctions it, the modes of nature then move your arm. Right? So that leaves you with desire. So that's what you can do. So that's what we do best. So all it is switching that desire from material to spiritual. So why is it focused on material? Why would we have material desire?
We're envious.
Okay, envious is there, but what's the value of being envious? What's the benefit?
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay, there's nothing there, but still, why are we doing it? It's not a trick question.
We think someone else has a better deal than us?
Okay, someone else has a better deal than us, but what is the value of a better deal?
Because we want to enjoy.
Okay, you think you'll get some enjoyment from it. In other words, then we have the concept that if we make the appropriate endeavor, you know, either our own endeavor or somehow or another it just comes along, you know, like that, then we will be happy. Right? So by contemplating, one can see is that everybody is working very hard, and everybody's getting facilities, the billboards are there, the advertisements, everything is there. But have you ever seen any of those people? Right? You know, the smiling person at the resort. Go to that resort. Where are those people? You understand? Does that make sense? I mean, it's just, you just have this smiling couple sitting on this beach, right? You go to that beach, there's a million people there. Who's smiling? You know? The other ones are smiling because they cleared the beach out. It's not crowded, right? And they're getting paid. You'd smile, right? We said, sit on this beach. We'll give you $1,000 if you smile. You smile, right? Yeah, why not? Okay, so that's what's going on. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole point is that if we contemplate this, we see that actually the material world doesn't really have anything to offer. We're used to it. Well, that's what we've been doing since time immemorial. So that's what we are comfortable at doing, but it's not actually giving the satisfaction we're looking for. If it was, we wouldn't be sitting here. Right? If you were fully satisfied in material life and getting whatever it is that you were looking for, you would not be in the Krishna consciousness movement. Right? That doesn't mean that the people that are not in the Krishna consciousness movement are satisfied. No, they're all unsatisfied. Just you were smart enough to figure out there must be something else. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then at the same time as if we look at the Krishna consciousness and we see the devotees of the Lord and his associates and their interaction, right, then we see this is a very nice arrangement. Right? You know, one is eternal, right? You know, the full knowledge is there, the unlimited bliss is there. You know, it doesn't get any better than that, right? And the fun part is, you know, it doesn't get better than that, the next moment it is better than that. Yeah. So, if you compare the two, then what's, you know, what would you choose? You understand? Nothing or unlimited. You know, it's a you know fairly straightforward choice. Right? So then just one has that, but how do you get that? Because the point is in the material world, the problem with the material world is it's full of materialists. Right? Who have this idea that, like you said in the beginning, everybody else is enjoying. Right? And that's why we go. Prahlad Maharaj calls it Shruti Sukhat, right? Happiness that's been heard about. No one's experienced it, just everybody hears about it. But, you know, like the people that go there, and things are going on, and it's all not really going according to plan, but something, and then, you know, they say, so, are we having fun yet? You know? Right? So, the idea is that devotees, they have love for Krishna. And they are experiencing that happiness. So if we associate with them, right, through other devotees, through the Shastra, you know, through hearing and chanting about Krishna, then it works nicely. Then we become inspired, right? And you see that the billboard, then you think, you know, something is there. But, you know, you read the scriptures and you hear the stories of something that actually is there. Because the other one, it's, you know, like we said, it's a paid model. You know, that car that he's leaning on, he doesn't own. And he may never own it. You know? Does that make sense? But the point is it's, you hear about those who actually are in touch with Krishna, are interacting with Krishna. Yeah. So that's how you develop the desires. You see those who already have that. Isn't it? It means you develop by desire by seeing somebody else with something that looks interesting. Right? So the devotees, they already have a relationship with Krishna. So if that looks interesting, then that's where the desire comes from. Does that work? Yes, no.
Sometimes I might feel like I'm desiring Krishna, but then might I behave a little bit differently?
It's just practice. In other words, it takes a while before the desire and the skills to accomplish that desire. You know, in other words, desire is there, then there's a goal to gain, right? So So to gain the goal means there must be an endeavor. To perform the endeavor, there must be skills of knowledge. Right? So there may be some lag between your desire and when the knowledge and skills develop. So that's why the process is called sadhana bhakti. You know, you're practicing devotional service. Devotional service is prema. So we're practicing devotional service. Right? But the point is in the spiritual world, they go from bhava to prema by practicing devotional service and the association of the eternal associates. It's the same process. You cultivate love for Krishna by associating with devotees. So in sadhana bhakti, it's the same thing. Does that make sense? So by properly associating with devotees, taking advantage of the process, applying it, then it'll start. It'll come with time. So if it doesn't, if you see that there's some lack, then you look at that and just figure out, you know, what to do about that particular thing. It doesn't mean, oh, I'm useless. It just means that's what has to be worked on. Right? Does that make sense? Just like, let's say you cook something and there's no salt in it. Okay? So does the cook sit down there and lament and roll on the ground and I'm so useless? But you just put some salt in it. Okay? You understand?
That we should know the principles and intricacies of Vaishnava etiquette so we can associate properly?
The more you know, the better the association. Because if you don't know, then you do things that aren't comfortable, so then people aren't comfortable. And so then the association doesn't go so well. So the more you know, then the better it runs. You know what I'm saying? Anything that you want to do, then the first thing we do is try to inform ourselves about it, how to improve it. But but somehow or another we think that devotional service and all that will just, it doesn't require any understanding or knowledge. Right? I want to do anything else. First thing you do is sit down at the, you know, the computer and look on the internet so you inform yourself. But somehow the devotional service we think, you know, it'll just happen naturally. You understand? It's the actions based on knowledge. You have proper knowledge and you have proper action. You lack knowledge, you lack action. Does that make sense? So that's why Rupa Goswami gives these things. These are all given in the first parts of his books. So the Upadeshamrita is talking about etiquette. You know, Nectar Devotion is talking about etiquette. You know, it's just being aware of how the importance of it. We take it for granted. It's about practicality. Practicality to do what? Practicality in relationships or practicality in mechanically manipulating the material nature to get a physical result? You understand? Manipulating the material nature, that takes skill. Right? So you have that skill, you can do it. You don't have the skill, you can't do it. Right? But the experience in devotional service, that means then you have to have spiritual understanding. Otherwise it won't work. So being practical most of the time means only in relation to manipulating material energy and getting material result. Most of the time when devotees say we need to be practical, that's actually what it means. Spiritual is a whole another dimension. Right? In other words, adding that you're doing it for Krishna on top of it. Yes, okay, maybe the end game is Krishna. But what about in between? You know, I won't remember Krishna through the whole process, only at the end I'll give it to Krishna. So that is one way of doing it. Right? That's called renunciation. But then in the 18th chapter, having explained everything, that Krishna brings up another point called sannyas. Sannyas means from the beginning, it's Krishna, so that means you're dealing with it in connection with Krishna all the way through, rather than I'm dealing with it according to my way of dealing, and then at the end when I get the result, I'll give the result to Krishna. So because it's connected to Krishna, then it's perfect. But more perfect than that is that all the way through it's connected to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So that's the meaning of these end instructions in Gita. How to do that. Does that make sense? Okay.
Excuse me, Maharaj. Talking about conditioning, it seems I've heard that by a certain age, maybe it was 18, I'm not sure what age, that conditioning, once we're conditioned by that age, it's very difficult after that to change our conditioning. So is that correct? And how does it relate to, you know, we have to change. If we've been brought up a certain way and we learn that etiquette should be done another way, we've already been conditioned up to a certain age in how to do things. Is there a kind of a shortcut or an easy way or a way that we can be conscious of to actually make that change so that the conditioning can be changed?
See, technically you're not changing the conditioning, you're purifying like that, because you can't change conditioning. You can purify it. Like someone's a businessman, you're not going to change that he's a businessman, you're going to purify it. You understand? You don't need to change. You know, let's say someone's like very intelligent, you don't have to change his intelligence, you have to change the purity of the intelligence. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So basically it's because that action is based on knowledge, you have to change your knowledge. You have to develop further the knowledge. In other words, if you're acting in a certain way and it's successful, that means you know the detail of how to apply it in that particular situation. Now, if, let's say, someone comes from a particular, you know, conditioning, and then they see how the devotees do it, but they can appreciate what's happening there, that means they understand the principle of what they're working on. Most people don't understand the principle. But they only know the detail, even the detail of doing it, but they're not really conscious of what it is. So it appears that we're changing things so much, but we're not. The principle remains the same. You're talking about a social system of interaction. It means the modern is talking about that, the devotees are talking about that. The modern, if you're talking about it in its theoretical state, then it's talking about cooperating together to develop, you know, the areas of arts and sciences and knowledge so that one can better the human facility and experience from that. In other words, everybody gets more sense gratification out of it. You know, which, you know, is great as a theory, but who works on that platform? Because when they get home and no one's watching, it's all about themselves. Right? And then you have the other problem is that's for those who are a little more philosophical. They'll talk like that. But in the modern age, who's the philosopher, really? And how do they get you to take part in this societal process? Even though you're supposed to take part in this, you know, selfless, moralistic social environment, advertisement, is it selfless? No, it's completely selfish. And is it necessarily moral? It's not based, it has to be moral. You know, it's sinfully tasteful. You know, all these things about toying with breaking all the rules. And you don't have to do it like everybody else. You do it your own way. But at the same time, as the economics goes on by that process, and then at the same time, one foolishly expects that one will be selfless in the social standing. So therefore, that's why you see is the present situation is really, really not working, because the social method expected and the economic method are diametrically opposed. Right? The economics is working on the projection is on the first level of consciousness of that of animals. You know, I mean, it has to function on the second, of course. But yes, does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, the social system that is being given is not very developed. It's based on we cooperate together because then we get more sense gratification out of it. But the principle of cooperating together, that selfless endeavor, that remains in Krishna consciousness. But if the selfless, instead of being that I'll ultimately get the benefit from it, then Krishna and the devotees will get the benefit. Right? So the principle, basic principle remains the same. you just elevate the, you know, its application by consciousness. So that's done through knowledge. So through knowledge you can change anything. It's practice. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so the shortcut's intelligence. Not a popular commodity these days. So they talk about it, but it really isn't a popular commodity. You know, everyone goes to school, everyone gets their fancy degrees. You know, before it's just you had, you know, BA, BSc, you know, like the, you have a few things now, they have, you know, 4 or 5 letters to explain it because it's so exact, you know, it's just like you're dealing in the, you know, whatever it is, the, how you say, the retinal functions of the left eye of a tsetse fly from, you know, upper, you know, how you say, Congo. Right? And you're the world expert, right? No? Yes. So then the problem is that in practical life, there is no knowledge, right? The knowledge is only being cultivated for professions, vocationally. So in Varna, there's no cultivation of knowledge in ashram. So that's the difference, is that devotional service means you start with ashram, because ashram's your lifestyle, right? Then that cultivation, that you can apply within Varna. Does that make sense? Yeah, so in other words, the lifestyle is the primary, the occupation is the secondary. But in the modern society, you know, if you want to be a little more upbeat, then the occupation becomes primary. There is no lifestyle. You know, so therefore it's... what people are looking for is what you're getting, finding in Krishna consciousness. You just have to be comfortable that it's actually doable. Is that okay? Something else. Yes.
How we can quickly lose the taste for criticizing other devotees?
How can we quickly lose the taste for criticizing other devotees? Well, one is, it's like Prabhu's question here is that if we understand the detrimental effect of it, how it means, in other words, there is nothing worse. You know what I'm saying? Other, you have 10 offenses against the holy name, but the worst is criticizing devotees. Like that. Others are bad, but it's the worst. Right? It's not the most disgusting. That's committing sin on the strength of the holy name. But even that's not the worst. The worst is criticizing devotees. So we may do it in a very sophisticated or intellectual way and consider that it's somehow or another superior, but that's neophyte thinking. It's not real thinking. So then, if we understand that and see what's the benefit, in other words, if we want to observe others and contemplate their qualities, why look at the bad? Why not look at the good? Because that also takes intelligence to be able to observe good qualities. Right? Intelligence means the power to observe. Right? To discriminate. What's different, what's common. That's what the intelligence does. So, how to discriminate the good qualities rather than how to discriminate the bad. The tendency, though, is that we discriminate the bad. Then the concept is if I can find a fault in someone else, that makes me superior. That's the motive. One of the motives. Other than the taste, but the motive is that I put myself in a better position because I found a fault. Because if there's any fault, then there's something wrong with it. So I found the fault, so therefore that puts me in a better position. But what's not necessarily noticed is the only reason you could find the fault is because you have the same characteristics. Does that make sense? A cook notices others cooking. Someone has no idea about cooking, you know, doesn't really notice finities. You know what I'm saying? You know, someone involved in economics, you know, in a situation notices those things. You know what I'm saying? Someone who's involved in, let's say, aesthetics notices the arrangements. Someone who dresses nice notices other people who dress nice. You understand? So the only reason you can find those particular faults because either you have those faults yourself in the negative, or you had the faults and you've overcome them. and now that you're in the possible. But the point is it's the field, otherwise you can't see it. You know what I'm saying? You cannot see a field that you don't have. You can't work in something outside your field. You know what I'm saying? Is that design sense? So that's another bit of an eye-opener. So you add that the reason you're able to see it most likely is because you have that fault. And by criticizing them, you're taking on those bad qualities. So you're actually cultivating those bad qualities in yourself by criticizing others. So if you look at that, practically that's not actually a very special situation. You know, it's something that one could easily, you know, with intelligence think this is not good. Right? But, you know, because of habit, because of a particular taste, it may take some time to get rid of it. But, you know, as Sarah Mataji said, the intelligence is how you'll overcome it. Does that make sense? Yes.
If someone starts taking up the process and due course of time, they start losing a taste for it, and we could see that they're slipping away. What can we do, like in practical ways, that we can help the person remain Krishna conscious?
Well, it's a matter of they had a taste before. So, since Krishna conscious is an eternal principle, it's not like the material world where things are temporary, then that means that taste is still available. Right, the mundane things change because the taste is not available. Right? Something that's not interesting, then Maya makes it interesting, and everybody gets involved. And then at some point, when the time has come, then she removes that interest. You know, in other words, the modes of nature just keep everybody very busy. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like people where, let's say, like the other day, I noticed. I don't know about here, but you know, yeah, about here, everyone's wearing a coat. But like up in you know, so-called summertime in Northern Europe, than that. Then one of the fashions that come up is you put on a bigger T-shirt first, then put a smaller T-shirt or something on top of it, so that the bigger T-shirt sticks out the bottom or out the sleeves or you know some way like that. You know, but a few years ago, that would be that you don't know how to dress. You put the small one on the inside so you can see it. And then you have this nice, you know, exact, clean, you know, something to look at, you know, from the bigger one being on the outside. So it's just the modes of nature that make one look interesting and the other not look interesting. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, in the material world, things are temporary. The taste that is available is short-lived. Right. But on the spiritual, it's always there. All you have to do is just connect to it. So if you can just inspire them that aspect of Krishna consciousness is still available. They may say things have changed, but nothing's changed. Anything's changed, maybe our view of it, the Krishna consciousness doesn't change. It's always available. Right? It's not like something, like we said, it's not like something mundane that has changed, and yes, it has. This is, it never changes. So it's just a matter of trying it. And then, you know, it's just like what do you do when you're teaching to somebody who's new to consciousness or just come back? You say try it. Right? You know, try chanting for a few weeks, see what happens. You know, and so it gets results. So the point is at any point anybody can take up Krishna consciousness, whether it's the first time or again. You know, and it will give that same taste. Yes.
Just to follow up on that point, you were emphasizing the importance of association, and I think that well, what we're just talking about in the initial stage and also for reviving Krishna consciousness, it's the association of devotees who are having a taste that will help the person also to get the taste again.
Yes, of course. Well, that's the person who's going to try to convince them. You know, we're taking, because he's asking the question, I get the idea that he's still involved in Krishna consciousness. He's talking about someone else who's not as involved. So therefore, by the association of the person in Krishna consciousness, i.e., him, then so like what you're saying, one would have to say is that that point wasn't brought out as strongly. So you understand what I'm saying? So in other words, it's the association of those who have a taste in Krishna consciousness that will regenerate this taste in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So I was just taking it for granted you were one of such persons.
Especially when trying to help someone with Krishna consciousness and they're very new, they can be quite critical of other devotees. And
but why would somebody new be critical of other devotees?
There's some behavior that they've seen in another person which made them which disturbed them. And so how do we ensure that they don't give on the behavior? At the same time, we can rectify the situation whereby they can start looking beyond those sort of seeming faults in the other person.
Yeah. What faults will they be finding?
For example,
there's a lack of prema. The platform of liberation hasn't been attained. They're not performing their brahminical duties, as established in the Shastra, like that, or that there's some, the aspect of this selfless moralism from the society they grew up in that they find a lack. So in other words, why are they viewing Krishna consciousness from the second stage of consciousness instead of the fifth? You understand? Because generally speaking, we don't train them in that. Right? Does that make sense? We don't train people in that. We just, if they're vegetarian, they're chanting Hare Krishna, then it's job well done. Right? But the point is you have to train them in Krishna consciousness. It's a voluntary movement. Right? Now let us say this would be what you're talking about. The person, comes to consciousness in the hospital, after an accident, and they look around the hospital and see it's full of people who are sick and some, unideal situation. And then they say, what am I doing here? I shouldn't be here. I should be in an ideal situation. So I don't want to be in the hospital. But what's the hospital for? People that are sick. So therefore, somebody's making a fault, that just proves the point. That's why they're supposed to be here. Because if they were perfect and had no faults, they don't need to be here. They'd already be back in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? Yeah. But the point is you have to train them. That's why we have all the philosophy and all that. Like that, It's not a... The idea is you understand the philosophy, then these things don't bother you. Because the point is this. They'll take it that, I don't want to be here, I want to go do what I want to do. But the point is the concept is I'm independent. Right? But they're not actually independent. Because their engagement in Krishna consciousness depends on everybody else being perfect. So one, it's not a very valid platform, and two, it's totally dependent. Independent means I can be Krishna conscious whether anybody else is or not. Right? Because association is there, you can find it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's not actually an elevated position. It's actually a very, very basic position. Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say, which would you say is more developed friendship or more shallow friendship? You have four friends that go to a restaurant. In one group, they all four order something completely different than the other, and they all get that, and they all sit and eat, and ask if anybody else wants, and all right, well, okay? The other group, you know, they all start to order, but someone's ordering something different. The others ask, why are you ordering that? You know, because the idea is that if they're all ordering something different than me, so are they enjoying more or less? If it's more, then I want it, and if it's less, then I'm going to harass them. So which of these two groups is deeper friendship? The first one, why? Because they're independent. Independent individuals who are working together in the mood of friendship. Well, the first one, it's dependent upon the situation. Otherwise, the situation isn't ideal. They can't even function. So the point is independence means, despite the situation, you can function. But if you can only function in ideal situations, where are those ideal situations in the material world? They aren't there. Everybody will have a story. Yeah, if this had happened or that, then I would have been successful. I would, you know, everybody's got a story. But the reality is it's not about the situation. It's about what you do with the situation. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, you have to train them how to deal with the situation. You know what I'm saying? But we have an idea that technical philosophy is not practical or too advanced. But a new person, you can tell them technical philosophy, and they'll just, that's how they'll look at things. You know, they don't have a problem with it. You know, in other words, all the things that devotees who've been around a while think the karmis will have a problem with because it's too technical, they don't have a problem with it. Only those devotees have a problem with it. You understand? Like that. It's simple. New people, you can explain the technical points of philosophy. They don't have difficulty with it because they're new. So, okay, so that's the way it is. You know what I'm saying? But the point is this, the principle of it is what you have to explain. That anybody can understand.
How can those devotees that aren't into the technical parts of the philosophy but come into it?
It's not a matter of that they have to be into it. It's the problem is that those who can be into it should be. Right? Because the point is proper explanation. The thing people come to Krishna consciousness looking for answers, so they should get them. Because we have them. I was just the other day, you know, starting Krishna books, so then I went through the, you know, you go through the introduction and everything. So George Harrison wrote this introduction. If you look at it, he's discussing philosophy. You don't hear devotees talk these days. It's so technical. And that was back, you know, how devotees talked in the, you know, 60s and early 70s. The technical points of Krishna is in everything, that's what they're looking for. Devotees don't even talk about that. The reason the guy wants a fancy car is that what he's looking for in that car is Krishna. Right? That's the taste. It's dead matter. What's in the car to attract it? You know, it's such great tin. Check out the rubber. Oh, I love the plastic. You know, did we leave something out? Oh, some aluminum. Yeah, okay. Open the hood and see some aluminum. I love aluminum. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so the point is it's Krishna's potency that is there in the form of whatever it is, aesthetics, or power, or prestige, or practicalness, or whatever's the element of the quality that they find in the car that they want. You understand? It's Krishna. It's not the dead matter. That's the illusion. Everything we're looking for is there's a quality of Krishna that we're trying to experience. Right? And that's experienced through his energy taking those forms and those activities, utilizing those forms that generate that experience of that quality. You know what I'm saying? Like there's rules of aesthetics. So if the car has a certain shape, it'll have more of an aesthetic appeal. It doesn't, it won't. You know what I'm saying? It's not that it's different or new. It's got to have the, it has to use the classic rules. So That's the whole point, is that it's still following God's law. So it's following God's laws, that's why that quality of, let's say, aesthetics or power manifests. Okay? Yes? Okay. That's what he's talking about. When was the last time you heard someone discussing that at that technical level? That's how they taught Krishna consciousness back in the 60s and early 70s.
Is that a deficit that we don't have that now? So much?
Who knows? Now everybody's being practical, quote-unquote. Which you can do, but the point is that practicalness is still Krishna. Still the same philosophy. You know, still nothing's changed. The material world hasn't changed. We always say, oh, but it's 2013, everything's changed. What's changed? It's still God's laws. Everything still works. Just man has changed what particular animal he likes to work at. You know, before, in the 1800s, 1900s, it's more of your kind of like a furry beasts was kind of more of the thing, you know, lions or leopards or something like that. Now there's no bugs and worms and stuff like that. So it's just they've changed consciousness like that. That's what's changed. But otherwise, the modes of nature, how it works, it's all the same. It's still the eternal laws of God still apply today as they did any other time. Nothing's changed. We like to say it's changed so we can, you know, maintain our attachment to our particular conditioning, but it hasn't changed. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of, if we understand that, then we would become serious. It doesn't change your position. If someone's a householder, he has his business or job, none of that changes. What changes is your view of it. Why it's attractive, why it works. You think, because I work hard, that's why I get money. And I have money, then we can enjoy it. But the thing is that's not what's happening. The reason that if you work hard, you get more money is because God's made that as the rule. If you're doing service for someone else or anything, to the expertise of the endeavor is the quality of result you get. That wasn't created by modern man. Economics, the concept of economics wasn't created by modern man. Buy something cheaper than you sell it? Who worked that out? You know, the Phoenicians, the Ionians, the Egyptians, the Chinese. Who worked it out? Nobody. God worked that out. Right? You have a cow, it eats grass, it produces milk, then you can sell the milk. God worked that one out. You understand? So the point is it's not just a matter of consciousness and seeing like that, but the problem is we're lazy to use our intelligence. And the problem is one can say it's okay, but you know, that's in Krishna consciousness being practical, but how practical are our relationships going? You don't use your intelligence in relationships, they also go just as badly. Because if you're not intelligent, you know, no endeavor works nicely, and if no endeavor works nicely, you don't get the result. So therefore, on the physical, emotional, intellectual, and spiritual platform, if we don't make the proper endeavor, how will we get the result? Does that make sense? And all Prabhupada's saying is change the consciousness, that's all. Not change the position, not change the work. The devotees take it that Krishna consciousness is an external process. If you're vegetarian, you're chanting, then that's all it is. Then everything else, you just need in place as it is. We're taking notes, a change in consciousness. You change the consciousness, that changes everything else. Nanda Baba is a grihastha, everybody in Vrindavan is a grihastha. Dwarka basically also everybody's a grihastha. Right? They all have jobs, they all have this, they all have wealth, they all have homes, they all have family. What's the difference? They're all conscious of Krishna in all the aspects what they have in common. It's the only difference. That makes sense. So what I'm saying is that here you have some new guy who's a musician and he's able to appreciate that philosophy. So that's my point. I'm saying to him is this can be explained to anybody. It's not a difficulty. It's just explaining it, sticking to the principle and explaining it using examples that whoever you're talking to will understand.
Is it easier to explain philosophy to new devotees because they're searching for God, but the older devotees are thinking, I've found God?
Depends on who you call newer and who you call older.
But as you were talking about how...
If anybody who's a student, then they're always open. Anybody who stopped being a student, they're the ones that are hard to explain it to. But if someone's still looking, it doesn't matter. The longer they've been around, the easier it is because they have more experience. Right? So then you can explain it to them in a few minutes, they can understand it. But if they've stopped learning or see no need to learn, then it's harder. Because then it's not the philosophy that's hard to understand. What's hard to understand is, why should I understand this? Does that make sense? Yeah. That's the real point. Yes, no.
Okay. Yes. So how can we keep being conscious of Krishna, always remembering Krishna, and encourage ourselves and others around us to chant with enthusiasm and love?
The point is love is what you want to get to. Enthusiasm is what you can do. Rupa Goswami defines enthusiasm as endeavoring with intelligence. So in other words, the love doesn't just mean that it's just feelings and that's all. The feelings have to be expressed. How do you express your feelings? You have to use some form to express it. So how do you deal with the form if you're not conscious of what you're dealing with? So that requires intelligence. So when you make that endeavor to be Krishna conscious using the intelligence, that will be enthusiasm. Does that make sense? That will generate enthusiasm. In other words, fitting in has its limits. Because fitting in, the karmis fit in because they're materialists. If you're not a materialist, you never fit in. You look in history, who was not such a materialist never fit in. Of course, they write about them. People who fit in are never in history. Right? You know, Joe Cooper, 1673, he fit in. Right? You ever heard of him? No. Do you want to hear about him? You know? He got up in the morning and, dragged himself out of bed and went into the kitchen, got himself a cup of black coffee, sat down, started to look at the newspaper. Kids started yelling and screaming, has to put it down. Then the wife comes in and said the kids are late for school, doesn't even drink his coffee. And then, after grumbling a bit, takes the kids off to school, then it's time for work. You want to hear more? My God, going all day. And not only that, the best part, this happens every day. Right? So fitting in is fabulous, right? It's one of the stupidest mantras the devotees come up with. One of the stupidest. And the fun part is they think they're intellectual. Nobody's trying to fit in. Everybody's trying to be individual and unique. Everybody's trying to stand out. What do you feel like if you come to the program and there's another lady who is exactly the same sari you have on? You feel, great, I fit in. That's the thought that comes to your mind, right? Yeah, that's it. Everybody's trying to be unique.
I'm not.
You're not. Not at all. Okay.
He's doing
you. Oh, okay. But you're the only one that said that. In fact, how many people know who Monty Python is? You understand? So the whole point is it doesn't have any meaning. Krishna consciousness is not about fitting in. It's about taking whatever position you're in. You don't have to change it, because the idea is fitting in means I can go back to my whatever my background was, and generally those who say fitting in means they came from some variety of middle class background. Those from a poor economic background, those from a rich economic background, don't use that mantra. Like that. It's middle class, because middle class means just fitting in, not being too much. Even if you don't want to go up too much, then they get it. If you don't want to drop down too much, it's finding that balance in the middle. Like that. So that desire is just, I want to be comfortable in my conditioning, that I can function my conditioning as I like it without having to use any intelligence. Right? But because the idea is this Krishna consciousness means I have to throw all that out. But that's not what Prabhupada said. It's that if that's where you're comfortable, remain in that position, make that position Krishna conscious, means everything about it. Be thoughtful. And don't, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Why do you have the couch that you have? Why did you put it in that particular room of the house? Why did you put it in that particular spot? Well, I don't know. So then, that's not intelligent. You should know. Right? And so the point is it's there, let's say it's comfortable. It's practical to have Krishna's practicalness. It's comfortable, Krishna's comfortableness. Right? It's an area so that we can have interaction. But the basis of interaction is Krishna. So in other words, there's nothing in the house that somebody does in their middle class, you know, urban life that isn't connected to Krishna. But they want to go on the illusion that it's not, and that's me. And then there's Krishna conscious. And of course I chant, you know, so I'm Krishna conscious. And then, okay, now the other 22 hours a day. Are there more involved, 24, you know, some other 20 hours a day? So the idea is how to connect all that to Krishna. That's what we're trying to do. And that's the process that's been given. And it's in all these different things. If you look at it, the philosophy is given in things like the Hare Krishna address. You know, we print it, we put it on little note leaflets that we hand it out to the people on the street. Do we ever read it? Do we contemplate it? Oh, I read that 20 years ago. But the point is, why did Prabhupada choose that? Because it's so essential. That was the message that if anybody heard that, they could change their life. And change doesn't mean I just changed it and then that job's over. Change means become fully God conscious. So in other words, Krishna consciousness is the opposite of the modern concept of knowledge, right? Because it's descending. So you start with the most essential principles that always apply. Then you give detail according to the time, place, and circumstance. Well, the modern, you start out with the simplest of detail and then expand it up to the sophisticated. And if you're lucky, they might get the deep principles, but there's a good chance they never will. You know, there's no guarantee that they'll get to principles. So therefore, it always applies. It always works. Does that make sense? Because that was the benediction Krishna got. Is everything about it will be ever fresh. You know, so every time you look at it, it will have new meaning.
Maharaj, you mentioned that there are five levels of consciousness. I don't know what those five
are. The first is sensual. It's just about yourself and your senses. The second is extended sense gratification, where you care about others' sense gratification. Right? The third level is then you care about duties. And the nature, actual nature of things. What's the nature? Not what I want them to be, but what they actually are. Right? And then what's my duties in relationship to that? In other words, the God's laws of how everything in the universe is created and what it's for and what it does and how it interacts. That's the third level of consciousness. Right? So the fourth level is that then is about the soul. Right? The fifth level is then about Krishna. So we're generally comfortable from the materialistic side with the first two levels, and from Krishna consciousness, the fourth and the fifth. The rub is that the third level of consciousness, which is where the social thing happens, that's the part that just doesn't relate. Nobody can relate to it. Right? Because we're used to social means what I want, so I cooperate to get what I want. rather than who I am and who everybody else is, and I cooperate in the overall thing. In other words, there's laws there. It's not about my sentiment. My sentiment's there, that's why I want to take part. But the formulas in which it works, I don't make them up. They're actually eternal laws. That's the concept. That's the reason devotees have problems on the social level. It's just acceptance of that principle. Because otherwise, unless you really have a lot of mundane good qualities, the second level of consciousness won't be very sophisticated. You know what I'm saying? But how is that going to get that? If you don't already have it, you won't get it. Like Krishna consciousness, the devotee, through that's the most pious. He develops all good qualities. But if you have those good qualities, then you know you would apply them naturally through the social system that is able to use those good qualities. Does that make sense? Your head doesn't look any bigger or smaller, so you seem to be doing okay. The thing is that anything that works out, we're following anyway instructions of authority, so therefore it works. Right? So our credit is we took part, not that we made it happen. Right? Let's give a simple example. You put something in your blender and push the button. What happens? It blends. Did you actually, now after it's blended, you'll take credit for having blended it. But did you actually do the blending? Were you inside there or spinning it around? The blending machine did it. It's the material cause. We're only the operative cause. So in other words, we took part in those elements of the process that we can, but the rest of it's done by material nature. So technically, where's our credit? Right? So we take a little bit more than we deserve. But at the same time, as things go wrong, it's the same thing. All it was is it wasn't performed properly. So what to do? You know what I'm saying? Let's say you push the button on the blender and it doesn't go on. Then what? Yeah, you know, you look and see, is it plugged in? Or, you know, maybe it's not, you know, tight enough or something like that. Or you put it all in, it works nicely, but you forgot to put the top on. Okay, so after cleaning the ceiling, then you can take the credit. Yes, I did that. So the point is that then you know, next time, put the lid on. It's not a matter of anything else. So in other words, the good and the bad, it's not actually us. It's not the soul. It's only involved with the conditioning. So it's just a matter of the soul's interest to involve those things or not. You know, if you're attached to it in a particular way, then you'll get upset if it doesn't go right. But if you're attached, you'll get elated. That's why Krishna says, don't be elated in happiness, right? Or disturbed in when things aren't nice. Because things will be nice and not nice. But you don't get overly involved. You know, it's nice, great. It's not nice, okay, it'll get better. Does that make sense? Okay, should probably end here. Otherwise, everyone might turn into a pumpkin. We have class again tomorrow morning. Some of it I walked up in the key. Yeah. Yeah.